Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, December the 21st, 2023. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this one. Equal amounts of dark chocolate and white chocolate is a balanced diet.
Whoa.
That's true. That's true. So is a cookie in one hand and a donut in the other.
Yes, isn't it delightful?
Now, without trying to be too pretentious about it, let's move along to the so-called educational part of the podcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool.
All important.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Hey. Well, all right, kids, it was on this day in 1913, Arthur Wynn's Word Cross, the first crossword puzzle, was published in the New York World. There's still a lot of very old people out there trying to figure that one out, right? And it was on this day in 1937, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the world's first full-length animated feature, premiered at the Carthay Circle Theater. Oh, that was a beautiful theater out there in Los Angeles. Torn down in 1969. Had nothing to do with Snow White or the Seven Dwarfs.
You are a sad, strange little man.
There's no doubt about it. When Tucker Carlson speaks, people listen. And he was speaking with Tim Pool on his podcast the other day. And made it very clear that he would oppose the reelection efforts of President Trump if he chooses Nikki Haley as his running mate. And When Tim Pool asked him about it, he just came out and said, I would not only not vote for that ticket, I would advocate against it as strongly as I could. Wow. Seems rather harsh, doesn't it? But he has his reasons. And you'd probably do well to listen. He said, that's just poison. I mean, there's someone who's actively opposed to the interests of the country I grew up in, who endorsed the BLM riots, and who's not left, but is neoliberal in the darkest, most speaking of nihilist way, and has no real popular support, is a creature of the oligarchs. So yeah, that would be reason enough to oppose the ticket. Now, in recent weeks, as I'm sure you're aware, rumors have been circulating that regarding the possibility of a Trump-Haley ticket, given that Haley has surpassed Ron DeSantis in some polls to claim the second position in the Republican primary. But then again, there's nothing written in granite that says that your presidential, let's call him a probable, okay, that your primary probable, your probable presidential candidate in the upcoming election has to choose the other from the field of primary contenders. I mean, this, you know, it's just not a rule. But Laura Trump, the daughter-in-law of Trump, declined to rule out a Trump-Haley ticket last week. I forgot who she was talking to in that. But I can't take too much away from Nikki Haley. She's good at what she does. Unfortunately, she has a lot of associations that cause me to scratch my head and say, is this really good for the country? And when Vivek Ramaswamy tore into her during that last debate. I mean, he just ripped into her mercilessly. And when I watched the expression on her face as he ticked off the laundry list of negatives about Nikki Haley, I realized, oh my God, Vivek Ramaswamy's got the goods on this lady.
We're talking about that trans issue. And Nikki Haley's campaign launch video sounded like a woke Dylan Mulvaney Bud Light ad talking about how she would kick in heels. At the first debate, she said that only a woman can get this job done. That's what she said. After the third debate, when I criticized Ronna McDaniel after five failed years of leadership of this party and criticized Nikki for her corrupt foreign dealings as a military contractor, she said that I have a woman problem. Nikki, I don't have a woman problem. You have a corruption problem. And I think that that's what people need to know. Nikki is corrupt. This is a woman who will send your kids to die so she can buy a bigger house. This is the problem. Using identity politics more effectively than Kamala Harris is a form of intellectual fraud.
Now, that crowd you heard in the background booing, those were Nikki Haley's financial supporters. So you can see what we're dealing with here. But yeah, apparently she's pretty corrupt, and Tucker Carlson believes that she's corrupt enough to corrupt a Donald Trump presidency. And so that's enough to make Tucker Carlson vote against Donald Trump. And I'm sure that right now, Trump's mind is already made up. No Nikki Haley on the ticket. Cullen McHugh, writing in Trending Politics, says that presidential contender Vivek Ramaswamy has vowed to boycott Colorado's Republican primary in protest of the shocking state Supreme Court decision to disqualify the former president from the 2024 general election ballot. You know, that's good. I liked hearing that. But what's in it for Ramaswamy? Is he angling for a VP spot? Could that be what's behind this? All right, let's go to the facts first. And that is, there was an unprecedented 4-3 ruling where the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Trump is ineligible under the 14th Amendment. That's the 14th Amendment is a Civil War era statute that bars former officers of the United States who have engaged in rebellion or insurrection from running for office. Now, far-left legal groups have sought to disqualify Trump from the ballot in a number of states in a number of ways, and it hasn't worked in the past. I don't think it's going to work here either, really. The Colorado Supreme Court, I think, really just succeeded in doing nothing but shooting themselves in the foot. They destroyed any credibility they might have had at any point. Because this is going to be undone by the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever. In fact, there's plenty of evidence to the contrary that Trump engaged in insurrection. He didn't. And he's not being charged with it. In his January 6th indictment, he's not being charged with it. Nor has he ever been convicted of anything. But, you know, just didn't stop the court from issuing the ruling. And Trump has vowed to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm sure the Supreme Court is just going to rubber stamp it, say, yeah, this is baloney. And, you know, what really escapes me is, did any of the justices on the Colorado Supreme Court give a moment's thought to their own credibility? Obviously not. Well, here's a statement that Vivek issued on Tuesday. And I think it was just late Tuesday.
They have just tried to bar President Trump from the Colorado ballot using an unconstitutional maneuver that is a bastardization of the 14th Amendment to our U.S. Constitution. This was a provision, Section 3, that was designed to bar Confederate members, people who switched to the Confederacy, from actually being able to serve. That's very different than what's at issue here, to say the least. This is a hollowed out husk of what the country was built on. The basic principle that we, the people, select our leadership, not the unelected elite class in the back of palace halls. That's old world Europe, not the United States. That's why I'm making a pledge today that I will withdraw, I pledge to withdraw from the Colorado GOP primary ballot unless and until Trump's name is restored. And I demand that Ron DeSantis and Chris Christie and Nikki Haley do the same thing, or else these Republicans are simply complicit in this unconstitutional attack on the way we conduct our constitutional republic. I refuse to be complicit in that. I think what they're doing is wrong. And I think it's up to Republicans to step up and stand up with a spine for our country's future. That's really what's at stake, whether we, the people, actually have a say in deciding who leads this country. Yes, it would be easier for other Republicans like me who are running in this race to say, hey, if Trump is sidelined, there's our opportunity. No doubt other candidates are probably privately celebrating with their corporate sponsors. That's not the right thing to do. I think the most useful thing that every GOP candidate can do right now is to join me in that pledge. I'll say that I will withdraw from that Colorado GOP primary ballot until Trump's name is restored. This belongs to the people, not to the unelected Democratic cabal of judges in Colorado or any other state. And I demand that Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Chris Christie do the same thing, or else they're complicit in what this security state is trying to do to shut down Trump. I stand by that, and I expect them to do the right thing.
Now, understand, I'm not making an allegation that this is the reason behind Vivek pulling out of the Colorado ballot or the primary. But I'm sure that that might be part of the motivation here. And Ramaswamy's frequently condemned leftist lawfare. He's really been very vocal about this, which I hasten to point out, none of the other GOP candidates have been. And Ramaswamy called on his colleagues to do the same, as you heard. So after Trump was indicted for the second time on charges of mishandling classified documents, Ramaswamy went to the courthouse in Florida and vowed to pardon Trump if he's convicted. Well, I don't think Trump's going to be convicted. They're going to try, but I don't think they're going to succeed. And quite frankly, I don't think Ramaswamy, as good as he is, I don't think he's going to be in a position to pardon Trump, even if Trump were to be convicted. I really believe that Trump is going to be president again. I trust you're familiar with Victor Davis Hanson. He's a very well-respected military historian, and I believe he plays his craft out at Stanford in California. Conservative, obviously. Very, very brilliant man. In fact, I would put him on the same level as somebody like Jordan Peterson. They're different types of people. They address different things, but they're both conservatives, and they embrace conservative ideology. Of course, Peterson is Canadian, but he's living here in the States these days because he's bumped heads with the Canadian government too many times. Canadian government in this particular instance, in this context, I'm referring to the Canadian government in the embodiment of somebody like Justin Trudeau, who is probably one of the world's foremost idiots. And he's dangerous because of it. And Jordan Peterson has come down here to the States to live. It's just too hot for him up there in Canada. Imagine that. So Victor Davis Hanson has a series on World War II that should not be missed by anyone, because he not only addresses what happened in the war, but how it took place the way it did. Well, he's also very adept at doing that regarding our country these days. What happened in 2020? What happened in the years leading up to 2020? What's happened in the years since 2020? And, you know, Tucker Carlson was on with Dan Bongino the other day. You can look it up on the internet. I think it's on YouTube. But they talked about what the left is about to throw at us here in 2024. I know everybody's going to go out and celebrate New Year's Eve. Happy New Year! Here's to a great 2024. But I'm warning you, 2024 is going to be a miserable year. It's going to be a dangerous year for a lot of people. In fact, I will go so far as to say there will probably be no more than a handful of Americans who will not be directly affected by what's coming down in 2024. And Tucker Carlson even warned Donald Trump, his own self, that he's a target for assassination. That's how dangerous things are. But I would like for you now to spend the next 10 minutes with Jordan Peterson and listen to this man. His remarks are wide-reaching in terms of what has gone on, what is likely to go on, why 2024 is going to shape up the way it's going to. And here again, I would like to quote FDR. The only thing we need fear is fear itself. But we have a monster alive and well in this country, and we have to face this country. So, starting off, Mr. Hanson talks about the left and how they look at Trump.
They look at Trump as a vampire, and they put a stake in his heart, but they're afraid that that stake could come out any time, that he's undying, and they're afraid of him. They are terrified of him. You know why they're terrified of him? Because they think he's smarter this time, and he has just cause to really get angry because of what they did to him. They can write all of the Atlantic Monthly, and they can write all of the New Yorker clever, glib little essays about Donald Trump was a threat to democracy, or they can write all their little Molly Ball Time essays, how clever and brilliant they were with their cabals and their conspiracies to get rid of them. But deep down inside, they know that if the right ever did that to Barack Obama or Joe Biden, they could have really made something out of the fact that Barack Obama had a hot mic expose where he told the president of Russia, you tell Vladimir that I will be flexible on missile defense. That's the security of the United States of America. If he gives me space in my last election, and Putin did do that. That's an impeachable offense if a phone call to Ukraine is. So they understand that, that the right could have done that to them. And they understand now the right probably will do that to them for their own survival. And they are scared. They're saying if a MAGA candidate wins and they win the House and the Senate, we're cooked because they're going to get special prosecutors and they're going to go after the Biden family like they've never gone after anybody. And they're going to find stuff because we know Joe is crooked. And then they're going to go after Merrick Garland and they're going to go after Mayorkas and they're not going to stop. And that's why they're scared. And they're going to do everybody thinks that the danger passed, they got what they wanted. No. You're never going to see anything like what they're going to do in 2024. All of this could have been reconciled. All they had to do was say Donald Trump should not be president, if that's what they believe. And we're not going to do any lawfare. We're not going to try to change the voting laws. We're not going to pack the court. We're not going to let in two states. We're not going to try to abolish the Senate filibuster. We're not going to try to change the voting ID laws. We're just going to play under the rules that we have. We don't need $419 million by Mark Zuckerberg infused. We don't need Sam Bankman-Fried, the crook, giving us $100 million. We're not going to go under the radar with George. So we're just going to show you, the American people, how we think Donald Trump should not be president, and we'll have a fair election. And they can't do that. They don't trust themselves. They think, you know what? Anybody in his right mind would close that border right now. Close the border. Anybody in his right mind would recall all of those DAs that have destroyed these major cities. Anybody in his right mind would not beg the Saudis or the Venezuelans or the Russians or the Iranians to pump oil on the eve of a midterm or drain their strategic petroleum when you have so much natural gas and oil. And nobody in their right mind would do that. And nobody in their right mind would ever just pull out of Afghanistan without warning, just so Joe Biden can say that on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 or the original October invasion of Afghanistan, I'm the president that got us out. Nobody would do that. And nobody would print $6 trillion when there's a pent-up demand post-COVID lockdown and there's a supply chain disruption, and throw that money without any audit or examination of who got it and why and how it was spent, but to inflate the economy and ruin it. Nobody would do that. And so they know that. And they know that they can't take that record to the American people. They have a deductive mind because they're ideologue. So they start with the premise that we're for social justice and for equity of result. And so we're morally superior and smarter than anybody else. And therefore we are entitled to do things that other people don't do. And so if under the cover of COVID and frightening people about COVID, we can change all the voting laws so that 30% instead of voting absentee and early voting shall become 70% in most states with very little audit of the level necessary to authenticate most ballots. They just do all this stuff because they start with the deductive principle. We are better. This is the vision, and therefore the following must happen. And if things don't fit the narrative, then they go after the person, they censor it. That's how they work. And if you keep that in mind, then everybody makes sense. And what I'm saying is they go on from one lie to the next. So everybody now knows that Donald Trump, we just discussed it, was impeached for things that Joe Biden got away with. Okay, everybody knows the laptop was authentic. Everybody knows that now. Everybody knows that it would have made a big difference on that debate when Donald Trump said it was. And Joe Biden said, no, 51 authorities. Everybody knew that Dushenko and Charles or whatever his name, Dolan, and Christopher Steele were frauds. and especially Glenn Simpson, and that Hillary Clinton took over an old Never Trumper file, inflated it with $1 million, got the FBI on it to hire Christopher Steele as a consultant informant, hid her so-called legal expenses, and she was fined and cited for that violation through Perkins Coie, Fusion GPS, DNC, and that file was fraudulent. It was made up. I said that from the first time I saw it. Everything in it was false. And yet we wasted 22 months and $40 million to know it was obvious. No apology. In fact, not only no apologies, they got Pulitzer Prize winners, some of the reporters. Every time they give these monstrous lies, there's no apologies. And why should they? Because in their way, they're just narratives. They're postmodern, Foucauldian, Lacan, Derrida, narratives. They were useful. So that's what they look back. Well, they were useful at the time, because when we went through the Mueller investigation, when we went through the laptop, we crippled Donald Trump, and therefore we were able to stop him. We had Anonymous. He was burrowed deep into the Homeland Security. He was a minor official, but we said he was one of the major operatives in the Trump administration. We lied. And then we printed his op-ed because it did what it was supposed to do. It weakened this right-wing agenda, so they think. And we got Admiral McRaven, and he came in and wrote an op-ed and said Trump should leave, the sooner the better. And then we got all of the four stars, McCaffrey, McChrystal, all of them, to say that Trump was Hitler, that he was Mussolini, that he was a liar, that he was danger. We got Mark Milley to call the Chinese. We did all of this. And yes, we do not want this to be done to us. If right now a retired four-star general says that Joe Biden is senile, or he's dangerous, or the Afghanistan is a disaster, and he should be removed sooner or later, or his weaponization of the DOJ or the FBI is Mussolini-like, or his hounding of individual people at school boards, or the way he conducted the Mar-a-Lago raid is remnant of, it's Nazi-like. And I'm just quoting from what they've said. You know what's going to happen to those people? You're going to get Merrick Garland to call up the Pentagon, and they're all going to be slapped with a Code 88 uniform code of military justice, and they're going to be court-martialed for disparaging the commander-in-chief. Trust me, they would in 2 seconds, and that's not going to happen. First, they're not going to say anything because they're not equally going to apply their standards of correct behavior on the part of the, and second all, they're going to say something with Donald Trump because they know that the media and the Pentagon are not going to do anything to them. Now, oh man, they would destroy them if they ever criticize the commander-in-chief. They would go after him like you wouldn't believe, and they know that. And so what we're talking about, I guess, to sum up and end this, they understand deterrence. They are saying to the American people, we are SOBs. We're capable of everything and anything. Now, which side do you want to be on? Because if you're on our side, you can do what Hunter Biden is. There's no consequences. If you want to say that the voting machines are crooked like Jill Stein, go ahead. She did in 2016. If you want to be Barbara Boxer and 32 Democrats and say, you know what? We're not going to certify the Ohio count and hold up the whole election. We're going to try to do that. Don't worry. They did it in 2004. If you're Al Gore and the registrar and the attorney general says, well, the votes have been counted and they have been certified in Florida. Oh, no, we're going to sue. We're going to sue and hold up the entire election for a month. And so you can do all of that as long as you're on our side. But if you don't do that and you want to go on the other side, then you're going to be in big trouble. And that's the message that they're trying to say. That's what we're really getting down to. Join the winning side. It's sort of like in the Soviet Union. If you're part of the nomenklatura and you join the party, you're exempt. If you're not, well, you're on your own. People say to me, well, you're an academic and you spent your whole life. How did you deal with those 94% of all academics are left wing? And I'm just using that percentage because that's a percentage of those who give money to political campaigns. 94% go to left wing or democratic causes. And they said, why are they so left wing? Is it they have tenure? They're exempt from the worrying about losing their job. They have guaranteed step increases. They have a 9-month work year. Is it because they teach their one or two classes a semester? What is it that makes them, are they idealistic because they deal with words or I said, no, No. They understand with if you want to get tenure and you want to be promoted and you want to be liked, you just parrot the majority cause. If it paid better, they'd be fascist.
That is downright chilling, but it's true. If it paid better, they'd be fascist. And they've demonstrated more than just a few fascistic tendencies in the last several years. Go all the way back to the first term of Barack Obama. I'll never forget that day he got up there and he said, "We live in the greatest country the world has ever known. Now I want you to join me as we fundamentally change it." Oh, I tell you, my friend, heed the warnings. 2024, and I hate to do this going into my next to the last podcast before Christmas, but heed the warnings. 2024 is going to be a real stinker of a year. We really need to end a blogcast like this with some real laughs. So here's Corey Edwards.
I do like sharing movies with my kids, movies I grew up with, classic movies. That's always fun. I like The Sound of Music. Oh, it's a great movie. But I have discovered that the movies we watch, it's a different experience the older we get, right? Like if you watch The Sound of Music in your 20s when you're single, like my attitude was like, go for it, Maria. Sing on that mountaintop and set those children free. Make them clothes out of curtains. Hurrah. And a couple decades later, I'm watching that movie and I think, you know, that Captain Von Trapp, he really kept those kids in line. I mean, they did whatever he told them to do. Great. Maybe I should wear a whistle around my neck. I don't know. The Wizard of Oz, that is adorable to show tiny children, right? Oh, man. But now my kids are teenagers, and they're asking a lot more questions. We watched it again recently. And, you know, Dorothy drops that house on that witch in Oz, and then she comes out in the movie. All the munchkins come out to sing to her. Welcome, welcome. You know, the mayor sings a solo. The Lollipop Guild, they sing a solo. And then they give a whole solo to the coroner. If you remember. As coroner, I must have heard, I thoroughly examined her. Oh, really? He's got a document and everything. Thoroughly examined? Would you take a pulse of the 2 feet sticking out of the house before they curled up like rotten carrots? And so my kids are asking, what is a coroner, Dad? And I said, well, that is someone who works full-time for the city and shows up at any homicide to determine the cause of death. So, like, we all get to talking like, well, if Munchkinland has a full-time coroner, there's a lot more homicide going on in Munchkinland than we knew about. I mean, there is crime. That means there's got to be cops working those little yellow streets. Munchkin cops. That's the show I want to see. Munchkin cops. Dewdrop, McGillicuddy, get in here. I want your gun and your badge. You're done. The only thing longer than the arm of the law are their twirly, twirly mustaches. We know they have an army, the Munchkin Army. We see them when the parade comes out for Dorothy. It's like 50 little guys in uniforms with little rifles, and they're marching in a straight line. But as an army, they are awful. They are terrible, because when the Wicked Witch of the West shows up, first thing these guys do, watch the movie, they just lay down on the ground. Prostrate on the ground, just like everybody else. They throw their guns aside, just like we practice, boys. It's a terrible defense. And the mayor's still singing. As mayor of the Munchkin City. Hey, stop singing, mayor, because this day is a fiasco. You got 2 witches in town. You got a death on your street. Terrible military. This is bad for election day. You're going to have a whole smear campaign against you. The mayor of the Munchkin City is soft on witches, soft on crime, and soft on house dropping tornado girls from the sky. Hi, I'm Henry Mushroom III, and I'm running for mayor. I'll stop those house dropping tornado girls from the sky. When I put on my giant flower-shaped hat, I go to work. Lady and the Tramp, that's another really cute movie to show kids, right? It's adorable. It's so romantic, right? Because those two characters are dogs. If they were people, that'd be the creepiest romance we could possibly watch. It's not a good relationship for people. Like, hey, lady, I heard you met someone. Yeah. He's a homeless guy.
That's it. Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.